And now, the man your mother warned you about, Mike Cannon.
Welcome back. Up next, a non-Zionist, non-Western point of view from the other side of the apartheid wall. From Palestine, we bring you This Week in Palestine. After that, a short segment or two, and we'll end this week with Scooter and his Inner Side radio show. That's the type of alternative non-corporate voices from around the country and the world you get each and every week right here on the Mike Cannon Show. And as always, thanks for listening.
The line must be drawn here.
This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for September 27th through October 3rd, 2008. Israeli settler attacks in the West Bank doubled during 2008, while in Gaza the Palestinian Petroleum Authority warns of a worsening crisis if the siege continues, as intra-Palestinian and Israeli-Palestinian talks are not progressing. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. We begin our weekly report with the nonviolent activities this week in Palestine, as October 2nd marks the International Day of Nonviolence, marked by the United Nations to honor the birth of the leader of the nonviolent movement in India, Mahatma Gandhi. Palestinians start the olive trees harvest season with settlers' assaults in Nailin and Hebron. In the village of Nailin, north of Ramallah, Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian farmers accompanied by international and Israeli activists en route to their lands to harvest the olive trees on the far side of the wall. About 40 activists clashed with as many settlers who claimed that the olive grove to be harvested do not indeed belong to the Nailin residents. The settlers tried to prevent the activists and the Palestinian family from reaching the trees. Local sources reported that the activists and the farmers managed to get the settlers off the land and to harvest the olive trees. Meanwhile, in Hebron, settlers attacked peace activists from the Israeli Rabbis for Human Rights movement as they stood protecting a group of Palestinians harvesting olive trees in their field. Israeli media sources said Israeli troops operating in the area tried to stop the settlers who were trying to force the farmers off the field. Rabbis for Human Rights and Israeli leftist movement said they are planning to accompany Palestinians in 40 different villages when they harvest their olive trees. Rabbis for Human Rights will provide these villagers with protection from the Israeli police, military and settlers who increasingly harass and assault Palestinians. In the village of Belayin, three civilians were wounded with rubber-coated steel bullets and dozens were treated for gas inhalation in the weekly nonviolent anti-wall protest Friday afternoon. The villagers, accompanied by international and Israeli supporters, marched after the Friday prayer carrying Palestinian flags and banners calling for continuing the nonviolent resistance to remove the wall and the settlements from the West Bank. Marchers also took to the streets chanting slogans calling for national unity among Palestinian factions. Protesters carried ladders they use in olive trees harvesting. This harvest begins soon. During the heaviest part of the season, Palestinian farmers often face problems from soldiers who shoot at them and booby-trap the trees. As protesters arrived at the gate in the fence, Israeli troops showered them with concussion grenades and rubber-coated steel bullets and dozens of gas canisters, causing many of them to have difficulty breathing. Dozens were treated for gas inhalation and three suffered minor injuries when they were hit by rubber-coated steel bullets. The three were identified as Muhib Barghouti, a journalist with a local newspaper, Abdullah Yassin from Belayin, and a Japanese peace activist. Also on Friday, in Al-Masara village in southern Bethlehem, clashes erupted between the Israeli troops and nonviolent activists who marched in the village in their weekly protest against the wall being built on their land. Also in Bethlehem, Palestinian and international demonstrators at the southern entrance to Al-Khadr on Jerusalem-Hebron Road continue their weekly Friday nonviolent protests against the ongoing construction of the illegal Israeli wall. They demand an end to the Israeli occupation. Protesters began with midday Friday prayer near Route 60, the settler bypass road, where the illegal wall is being constructed. No Israeli military were present. On Monday, October 6th, a new aid convoy aimed at breaking the siege on the Gaza Strip is expected to enter through the Rafah crossing in the southern Gaza Strip, coming from Egypt. The convoy, coordinated between the Popular Committee to Break the Siege on Gaza and the Egyptian Medical Union, will be carrying medical aid to the besieged Gaza population. The convoy was encouraged by the success of the Free Gaza Movement, who were able in August to sail from Cyprus to Gaza, carrying 44 international human rights activists on board. For IMEMC.org, this is George Shmawi. Palestinian and Israeli negotiators are set to meet in Cairo next November with representatives of the Quartet Committee for Middle East Peace in order to discuss future peace talks. Meanwhile, representatives of Palestinian factions are meeting this month in Cairo to work out their internal differences. IMEMC's E.L. Humble has more.
As Palestinian-Israeli peace talks continue to be stalled, Palestinian and Israeli negotiators, with the participation of the Quartet, are scheduled to meet in Cairo in November in order to lay out broad lines for their future peace talks. The outgoing Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, said earlier this week that Israel should withdraw from the Arab-Palestinian neighborhoods of the occupied East Jerusalem so that a workable solution can be guaranteed. Olmert's statements come as the two sides' negotiations are yet to reach an agreement on several contentious issues such as the status of East Jerusalem, the problem of Palestinian refugees, and the future borders of the Palestinian state, water, and security arrangements. In Damascus, Secretary of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Group, Ramadan Abdullah Shallah, said that Jerusalem cannot be liberated through negotiations, but rather through war, slamming underway Palestinian-Israeli talks. Last November, Washington brought Palestinians and Israelis together in the framework of Annapolis Peace Summit, on the basis of a two-state solution by the end of this year. At the internal level, as both Hamas and Fatah parties argue over the upcoming presidential elections in January 2009, the representatives are due to meet in Cairo this month to work out their differences for the best of national unity in Palestine. Deputy Speaker of the Hamas-dominated parliament, known as the Palestinian Legislative Council, PLC, Dr. Ahmad Bahar, rejected this week an Egyptian offer that a technocrat-dominated government can be formed to end current political turmoil. Faraj Al-Ghul, a Hamas leader in Gaza, told the IMEMC that his party will act according to item number 37 of the Palestinian Basic Law, which states as the president's term in office ends, the PLC's head takes the post. Hamas has repeatedly stated that the Fatah leader and PA's president, Mahmoud Abbas, will be no longer a president after January 8, 2008. Hamas's deputy head of PLC was reportedly said he would assume the president's post by then. Meanwhile, Fatah local leader in Gaza, Yahya Rabah, argued in an interview with the IMEMC that according to the Palestinian institution, simultaneous presidential and legislative elections shall be held as soon as the president's term ends. Rabah maintained that any claim to presidency by the dominant party Hamas is illegal. He stated that the length of the term for both the presidency and the parliament is the same, therefore mandate that both bodies should be terminated simultaneously. In the shadow of such controversy, representatives of both Hamas and Fatah will be holding Egyptian mediated talks next week, overending their differences and hope to come out with a national unity agreement. The two parties have been at odds since the Hamas party took power after January 2006's parliamentary elections. Hamas is opposed to peace talks with Israel until Israel halts actions against the Palestinian people, while Fatah continues peace negotiations with Israel. For IMEMC.org, this is E.L. Humble.
In the West Bank, the Israeli military invaded several towns and villages, detaining dozens of Palestinians. Meanwhile, the Ramallah-based Palestinian government stated it released scores of Hamas supporters jailed in its prisons, while Hamas denied the reports. These news are more with IMEMC's Jessica Husley.
This week, Israeli troops invaded several West Bank cities, towns, and villages, rounding up dozens of people. The detention campaigns were concentrated in the cities of Nablus, Jenin, Tukaram, and Hebron. Earlier this week, a number of armed Israeli settlers attacked the Kufair El-Dik village near the West Bank city of Nablus. They were reported killing a teenage Palestinian shepherd. The settlers vandalized local Palestinian homes, messing with contents inside and terrifying the unarmed inhabitants. Israeli settlers' attacks have been reported as escalated over the past few weeks. The occupied West Bank is surrounded by a number of Israeli settlements, some of which are major blocks, such as Ma'ale Adumim, which lies in between Jerusalem and Jericho. International law regards such settlements illegal. However, Israel continues to expand them or build new ones on occupied Palestinian land. Meanwhile, as representatives of both the rival Fatah and Hamas parties are set to hold talks in Cairo next week, the Ramallah-based Fatah-led government said it released about 40 Hamas prisoners that were being held in the Palestinian prison. The Hamas-led government in Gaza denied that any Hamas supporters were released from the Palestinian authorities' prisons in the West Bank, demanding release of all of its supporters. The Palestinian Fatah and Hamas parties have been at odds since Hamas took power after January of 2006 parliamentary elections. Hamas shuns all peace talks with Israel. For IMEMC, this is Jessica Holsey.
In Gaza, the Petroleum Authority warned this week of a fueling crisis in the upcoming winter, and the Hamas government released the number of Fatah supporters jailed in its prisons. IMEMC's Rami Al-Mighari has the details.
The Hamas-run Palestinian Petroleum Authority warned this week of a fueling crisis in the upcoming winter, saying that with the inadequate quantities of fuel supplies from Israel, the demand for fuel, especially cooking gas, will be higher. Meanwhile, the Hamas government in Gaza released this week several Fatah leaders and supporters from its Gaza-based jails. The move was considered by a government spokesman as a goodwill gesture ahead of the upcoming National Unity Talks due to be held in Cairo next week. On the other hand, the International Campaign for Breaking the Israeli Blockade on Gaza said this week that a convoy of international campaigners will arrive in Gaza next Monday in a bid of support to the besieged Gaza population. For 16 months now, Gaza lives under a crippling Israeli siege, which came into effect right after the Hamas' takeover of the region in June 2007 amidst factional fighting with the Fatah Party of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. In the meantime, a number of Gaza-based resistance factions warned this week of the possible collapse of a three-month-old ceasefire with Israel unless Israel lifts its blockade and stops its actions against the Gaza Strip. This past June, Egyptian officials brokered a ceasefire deal between Israel and the Palestinian factions in Gaza on the basis of halting homemade shells fired into nearby Israeli towns and lifting the Israeli blockade on the coastal territory. For IMEMC.org, this is Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
And that was just some of the news this week in Palestine. For constant update, check out our website at www.imemc.org. Thanks for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. This week's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and George Shmawi.
Lady from Ohio, the only way they can pass this bill is by creating and sustaining a panic atmosphere. That atmosphere is not justified. Many of us were told in private conversations that if we voted against this bill on Monday, that the sky would fall, the market would drop 2,000 or 3,000 points the first day, another couple thousand the second day, and a few members were even told that there would be martial law in America if we voted no. That's what I call fear-mongering. Unjustified. Proven wrong. We've got a week, we've got 2 weeks to write a good bill. The only way to pass a bad bill, keep the panic pressure on. Now, what has the Senate done to this bill?
I was disappointed in the vote with the United States Congress on the economic rescue plan.
Poor Lehman Brothers, y'all got the shaft.
Shaft!
The government said, good luck with that. And AIG, old Uncle Sam, he loaned you $85 billion, but now he owns you. Some cry out, we've become a socialist state, while others say, we need to regulate. Should I vote McCain or pull the lever for Obama? I'm thinking either way, I'll be moving back in with Mama. But
the cooking's good. And I think she'll drive me to work, save money on groceries and gas. You see, I don't have much job security. I'm an internet comedian. I'm not even sure if that's technically a job. I don't think it is. I can't put my finger on it, but you know things have gone wrong when I can't even afford to finish this song.
So I think what you have to remember is, as long as we feel it's a fat cat bailout, the public is absolutely frustrated and won't go with it. Every single financial guy who got into a mess has to give his golden parachute, leave it at the door.
What about people that collected large bonuses as a result of 40-to-1 leverage that Main Street is very offended by? And that one of the reasons you have 300-to-1 voter opposition to this plan is they know that those bonuses were obtained by assuming risks that the person taking the risk knew they could never, or very possibly knew they could never.
But what they were taking on, the heads of the
firm. I just don't think you can go backwards. You can't go backwards and take money back from someone who's already tapped it.
Even if the voters refuse, well, then the voters apparently will refuse to bail you out.
You got both hands on the steering wheel. You say you want to take another turn. You think your backup plan is a robust deal, but we ain't got $700 billion to burn. And I don't want to pay for the shit you pulled when I can't even pay to get my tank half full. I don't want to pay another penny for what you did. I don't want to spend another dime on you when you can't even.
Citigroup and Wachovia Bank, how many of those are you going to arrange at this point? That's why traders down here are in a somewhat of a state of despair. Take a look at the big financial and commodity stocks. Brand new lows on many commodity stocks because the other trade is the global slowdown trade that's been going on. So you see.
All right, Dylan, thanks so much. We're down 8.25% right now, and you'd have to go back till 2000, really, when the bubble didn't just burst and when it exploded, to find out a day where we had a percentage decline of this magnitude. And we haven't gotten to that point level.
The wheel in the sky continues to turn, and Warren Buffett's got $5 billion to burn. But taking from the poor and giving to the rich won't work, no. I don't wanna pay for the shit you pulled when I can't even pay to get my tank half full. I don't wanna spend another penny on what you did.
Hey there, sexy. Have you come to play? That's right, big boy. Enjoy the Mike Cannon Show.
Just as the edifices of finance capital begin to slip into the abyss, a report shows that the black American economy went into reverse 8 years ago. The study for the Economic Policy Institute is titled Reversal of Fortune and tracks the roller coaster ride from the late 90s when blacks registered real progress in employment, housing, and reduction of poverty to the steady slide backwards that began around the year 2001. Viewed in hindsight, the late 90s were among the most promising economic years on record for African Americans. Black family income grew at the quickest pace since the 1950s and 60s, when jobs were abundant and unions far more powerful. Although black unemployment remained far higher than white joblessness, even in the robust economy of the 90s, employment rates did improve, and the African American poverty rate declined significantly, as did crime in black communities. All that came to a halt in 2001. African American families lost $404 per year in income, a 1% drop between 2000 and 2007. The worst off were single, male-headed households, which saw incomes decline over 9% during George Bush's first 7 years in the White House. Poverty among African Americans, which had declined 8.5% in the years between 1989 and 2000, rose 2.8% from 2000 to 2007. Black home ownership, which was just shy of 50% in 2004, was down to around 47% by 2007, before the subprime lending crisis made itself generally felt. Even as government and business announced that the economy was recovering from the downturn of the early to mid-2000s, blacks were experiencing a jobless recovery, which, for a people with very little wealth to lean back on, is no recovery at all. The authors of the Economic Policy Institute study conclude that black America needs a strategy for black full employment. Their reasoning is that, since blacks are consistently left behind in the employment arena, the best way to ensure a generally healthy employment environment is to work towards bringing black unemployment below 5%. The EPI's approach, although eminently sensible, would require government measures specifically targeted at joblessness in black areas, rather than measuring the nation's economic health on statistics that mask pervasive racial disparities in society. Unfortunately, the presidential candidate that overwhelming numbers of African Americans support, Barack Obama, opposes race-specific remedies for America's economic problems, insisting that class-based measures will serve everybody. Of course, the numbers show that America doesn't work that way. The EPI study reveals that black Americans face special obstacles, even in boom times like the late 90s. Now, the nation, and possibly the world, peers into the gathering darkness. With blacks already facing loss of precious housing wealth hovering around $100 billion, the prospect of mass unemployment is terrifying indeed. The 90s were not heaven by any stretch of the imagination, but the future is shaping up to be hell. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
The wind blows weirdly, baby can snows, fire, tornadoes, and suddenly snow. If you live near a coast, you can double that blow, cause the weather has a fist and the baby kids knows it. Your roof could turn into a memory. Your piano is out in the yard. Your underwear drawer didn't get very far. Granny, is that your thong? Just look at that fool face down in the pool. The wind blew harder than his head. No damn storm's gonna chase me out. So the gene pool is cleaner by one tonight, cause the weather is a bitch and the Babykins knows it. I've been soaked and pelted, hammered and sweltered, walking through Texas heat. Cooking my brain like a chicken fried steak, melted on a Houston street. I've survived a couple of ice storms, saw a woman get killed head on. Trucks and snow make a sobering mix, a punch and a spin and you're gone. Some say it's a natural process, some say Exxon is to blame. I say it's a little bit of everything, a six-ace poker game. Lizard on a stick is an entree, when the cows and the chickens are gone. Godzillas and bushes will come and go, but the people gotta trudge right on. When the weather is fearsome, Babykins knows it. So the weather is frightful, Babykins knows. Say a Hail Mary and hold your damn nose. The sky opened up and the great dung rose, and the odds are slim. And the Babykins knows it.
And that was Hell Pope Huey with the Bad Weather Report. Welcome to the Innerside Radio Program, or I should say, welcome back. It's been a weird 3 weeks. Nice to be back on the radio. As you know, we had some bad weather down here in Houston. KPFT was up and running as of the middle of last week, and we got power back on at the house here soon after. Kids are back in school. Everybody's okay. And I'm sure y'all would like to hear some awesome hurricane adventure stories. But I really don't have much of a tale. Our neighborhood got whacked pretty good. The eye passed about 6 miles from here. Trees down all over the roads. We were trapped in our own subdivision. It was suburbia against nature. But there were enough chainsaws and manpower to hack our way out, dragging our canoes behind us. And when finally we got all the way to the main drag, we realized that there was no place to go. Just dangling streetlights and darkness to the horizon. So we went back to the cul-de-sac and dragged out the barbecues and lawn chairs and got really drunk. Actually, pictures are better than words, so Google The Inner Side, and I've got a photo and video essay up there if y'all want to check it out. It's pretty bizarre. It's all very personal, but that's it. Y'all know more about Hurricane Icarumba than I do. We were just sitting around in the dark for 10 days. No power, no internet, no TV. The radio coverage was pretty weak. We didn't even know that the stock market crashed. And then I bugged out of town. Went to the AAI Atheist Convention in L.A. on the Queen Mary. That's the ship, not the drag bar in Hollywood. And had a great time. So I'm shouting out to Cousin Paul, who let me ride the Harley. I bet you wish you had a cousin like that. Sean Lennon from Upstart Radio. P.Z. Myers and the whole AAI gang. And Margaret Downey, who worked hard to put on a great event. I got more pictures and audio up on the Innerside webpage, so I guess we're up to date. It's Thursday night here in Houston at KPFT, and the VP debate has just wound down. And there seems to be a lot of activity over in Studio B. Let's look in and see what's going on.
93.3 WNRB LP Wausau.
Looks like Hockey Mom Bible Spies just walked into the station. There's secret servers everywhere. Let's see if we can slide in. Excuse me. No, I'm all right. I'm the media. Excuse me. No, I work here. I'm the media. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, Caribou Barbie is in the studio. Oh, man.
I like that. Mr. Scooter, is it?
Yes, Mr. Scooter.
Caribou Barbie, that?
That's the best line I've stolen today.
That is me.
Sarah, I just got to tell you, you are so sexy, Sarah. I love you.
If you'd have seen her winking at you, you'd love her.
I tell you, man.
That wink was just for you.
Barbie. I'm sure it was.
You keep saying you're never going to blink, and then you get on there just blinking like crazy.
Like certain interpretations of the Bible that I have chosen myself, it was a metaphor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
I saw you on Katie Couric, and I really want you to... Me to score me some of that acid. I mean, that had to be good stuff, man.
It's called Maverick.
Yeah.
Caller number 4, you're on the air.
My opinion of Sarah Palin did not change. I think she gave a fair performance of being coached and being told what to say.
She's teachable. There you go.
And I felt she tried too hard, and that winking had no place in a vice presidential debate.
Hello?
Sorry, that was a boo-boo. And Annelle, we've got a brand new board op on the phone, and we're so sorry. And as a matter of fact, I've got to say, my heart goes out to the Hurricane Ike people and everybody that suffered there. Hello? And let me just say, let me just say this really quickly. Up here at KPFT, we've suffered some problems with our computers, too. You know, just tell us what you want us to call you, and we'll call you that, and we can keep on going. Okay, folks? Okay? God bless. And hello, who's that there on line 4?
You can't tell me for a second that neither John McCain nor Sarah Palin have ever really led a middle-class existence in their life. So I have a hard time believing that they know what's going to be best for me and the people that I know. The other thing,
sure that was our board.
I don't think that was us. I beg to differ very much with whatever your name is, young man, because my husband Todd and I, we once had to make a home out of the dead carcass of a bear. I lived this, Rick. I don't know what you think you were, where you were, but my husband Todd and I, when we were younger, we lived on welfare and we lived inside the carcass of a bear. It wasn't funny at the time. It was a harrowing time.
Did you have health care?
We did not have insurance. We lived out there in the wild, free, like human Alaskans do. Oh. And we know about suffering.
Hey, she just spit skull in my coffee cup.
Hey, watch out, children.
Boy, you hear that skull?
She just spit skull in my coffee cup.
That is not skull.
Thank you for calling. We have a full board.
Oh, that's moose blood.
All right.
It's not moose blood. You know, you people from California or Texas or wherever, you have the strangest ideas of what it is that we in Alaska are up there doing. And it's not moose blood.
You're reading magazines.
Not moose blood, and it's not. I assure you, it's ground up wolf toenails, and so you know you both had it wrong.
Annelle, help me out here.
Don't go around acting like.
If I could get a word in.
Go ahead.
Come on, Annelle. We're sorry you got cut off.
I'm going to try to be real quick, but. You mentioned and Sarah, you know, I appreciate that you're staying up after the debate to talk to everybody on KPFT, but I'm wondering why you're not home with your baby, because I noticed after the debate you held that baby like it belonged to somebody else. You just didn't hold that baby like it was yours. So
they're all God's children, and now
wondering.
They ultimately belong to God, the Heavenly Father, and I can't really. hold a child like it's mine, because from conception, from the day it's conceived, it's God's.
But yeah, anyway.
Did you hear her read out that string of white guys and then call it how diverse they were?
Yes. The other thing I tell you that was scary for me, when she was talking about the role of the vice president and exerting what the Constitution allows, and I was like, that was real scary. And I'm like, oh, gee. And the other thing I thought that Sarah Palin was one more example of the Republicans' lack of respect for rules, regulations, and laws. She tossed out the rules of the debate and said, well, I'm not going to answer the question. And in the first part of the debate, she deflected all of the questions, so she didn't follow the rules of the debate to even stick to the questions that were being asked.
No, she did not answer a question.
No, she announced that she wasn't going to answer the question.
Exactly. I'm
talking to the American people.
How can you gain the respect of people and say, well, I'm not going to answer the question even though I'm in a debate. I'm just not going to do it correctly. The other thing, I felt that she was dressed inappropriately for a vice presidential candidate. I thought her clothes were far too tight, and I think she had on a pair of red high heel pointy toe shoes for a debate. I couldn't understand that. But I just can't imagine having an effective diplomatic administration moving into the new world. I think we would have more of the same, and I'm really concerned about that. And I guess the definition of a maverick is not so much of really being someone that you strike out and really do good things, but I think it might be being reckless and impulsive and just doing something because you feel like it and it's not well thought out, and it doesn't necessarily adhere to any reasoning.
Is that kind of like picking Sarah for vice president?
Sarah, I just have to say,
And about those heels, you know, I'm not surprised that people are giving me a hard time about those shoes. Those shoes are, you know, these elite people that are giving me a hard time. Those shoes are made from a very rare shell that comes in there. There's only three of them left.
Baby seals?
In the world.
Baby seal shoes.
They are very rare, a very rare animal. And these elite people that are making fun of my shoes, there's only three of these animals left in the world, and I would be dishonoring I would be dishonoring that animal if I didn't show off its beautiful fur and skin on national TV.
Caller number one.
And I don't
one.
Care what these elite people say.
Caller number one, you're on the air.
You're on the air.
This is Chris.
Chris? Hi, Chris.
I had a question for Nazi Palin.
For who?
Governor Palin.
Oh, okay.
I did like the way some of the Nazis wore their hair.
Oh yeah, you still got that little transmitter stuck in your bun that you were listening to, and the ones you got from Bush.
Oh, I'll pull that out.
If you mavericks steal the election, does that mean that all the books in the library will be replaced with Bibles?
There are some great authors. People that write about Jesus and children's stories. You know, I think that we can all read some better books.
All right. Well, thank you. Five?
Yeah, thanks, five.
I am five.
Come on with it, caller number five.
Really, when you look all around it, I agree with I guess it was Anel had said about the way she handled the debate. It was pretty much just exactly what I expected of her.
Yeah, and I knew that energy thing was coming because she kind of touched on that with Katie.
You got to be doing pretty bad in the PR when you get hardballed by Katie Couric.
That Katie Couric, she is a little demon. She's possessed by some scary, scary evil.
She's been talking to Keith. All right. Thank you for calling, Chris.
Evil little witch.
Yeah,
right
I thought your witch doctor friend was protecting you from people like that.
There is only, you know, God up in heaven and Satan down below. That's as black and white as it gets.
All right. Caller number one, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us your name or
this
a name.
This is Winston Smith.
Hey, Winston.
Hi, Winston.
What were your observations tonight?
Well, it's a continuation of nothing more than bad theater. If that passes for a debate or a national political conversation, well, we're in a lot of trouble.
plain and simple.
I think we're in trouble.
The message is they want business as usual, and we, frankly, can't afford that any longer on a number of different levels.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah, my hope is that they're just saying this to get elected.
You can afford it where I'm sitting.
I don't think that there's any hope. I think that they fully intend to continue business as usual. I mean, the Barack camp is going to bring us better wars. I think they're both having a very difficult time distinguishing themselves and their positions from one another, which, I mean, again, you have to suspend your disbelief to take any of this seriously. So.
Winston, I'm gonna tell you what my dear old grandmother's uncle's pappy used to
Go
say.
Go ahead, Muffy.
This has stayed with me in my heart.
Come on, Muffy.
For a long
time.
And it's he used to say rape and plunder. That was his motto, rape and plunder. And I have carried that, and it's helped me. Maybe it can help you.
Well, I guess you know where you stand, huh?
Rape and plunder.
And
it's helped. It's helped me.
And she by the way, you can get extra discount rape kits from Hockey Mom here. Oh, by the way, all the
people... And I save taxes by making them pay their own. Why should the government have to pay for what the taxpayers are going to steal from the government?
I don't want to interrupt you here, but for all the people who have been playing the Sarah Palin drinking game, here you go. Hockey Mom, Maverick, Joe Sixpack, Don't You Know? Okay,
Main
y'all got some
Street.
Catching up to
Main
do now.
Main Street, yeah.
Can you put Main Street on there?
Main Street.
So meanwhile, the future for our children is grim.
My children are young, and they are fertile, and they...
Line 4, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Please tell us your name, sir.
My name is Loris. Loris. I'm calling from Montrose.
All right.
Hi, Loris.
Yeah, I'm actually not far from the studios. But, you know, I grew up in Montrose, and I grew up not far from Main Street in Houston, Texas. And what I'm really getting sick of hearing on these debates and in the general, you know, talk in the nation is Main Street this, Main Street that. Well, they always talk about small-town Main Street and small-town values. But what about people in the big cities and our values, you know?
Yeah, Luther King Boulevard, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I mean, I'm seeing homeless people pass by my apartment complex all the time. You know, I help them out whenever I can. You know, I'm seeing the immigrants who are picking up the detritus left by Hurricane Ike. You know, unfortunately, we've shipped so many of them back that we have tons of waste still around Houston right now. You know, God love them. And, you know, it just kills me that only small towns are what matters in this election, it seems. And I'm really sick of it because, you know, Houston is a town of at least 3 million people, 5 million if you count the Metroplex. And it's like, we don't even exist.
That's like 6 Alaskas.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm the governor of Alaska. Well, we have more people in Houston.
We have more people in Midtown.
Midtown, you know, exactly.
We are the biggest state.
Yeah.
Alaska is the biggest.
You get in and get
Russia.
Your opinions in.
You can see Russia.
The other thing I want to mention is that, you know, I was watching the debate on CNN, and my sister was watching it with me. She goes, well, let's see what Fox News has to say after the debate. All of their analysts were conservative, every single one of them.
Oh, and then stop the presses.
What?
Stop the presses. Conservatives on Fox News? No way.
They skew the debate completely, you know?
Well, yeah, if people that are watching Fox News, they've already made up their mind. Thank you for calling. We got a full board.
You.
Call back next week. We'll talk about the issues.
Yeah, I've got a question for Sarah.
Come on with it.
Can you see into Putin's soul from Alaska?
That's a bit far-fetched, but I can see into his soul from the TV.
All right. Caller number 3, you're on the air.
Hey, I just had a quick comment and a quick question for Sarah.
All right.
I am just wondering, Robert.
Oh, well, I really miss the knitting needles. I know they're out of style and everything, but I really do miss the knitting needles in the bun there. I thought that was pretty good, but I guess it is out of style.
You want to put your needles in my bun?
Those were rifle cleaning rods. Those weren't knitting needles.
Those were rifle cleaning rods. That's very observant. I'm proud of you for not stereotyping me this time like you did last time.
Oh, well, thank you. But my question is do baby seals go to heaven after they've been clubbed to death?
They have their own sort of baby seal heaven, and yes, they do.
So on your feet.
Which, you know, and
that's
so it's really, because, you know, and they have that water, so they get baptized. That's already taken care of. So they all go to heaven.
Oh,
so
good.
Club away.
Oh, good.
Club away on the baby seals. Club away.
Yeah. Line two, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing this evening?
All right.
Good. My name is Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
I don't know really what to say, but I'm just, you know, I've been living in the United States since 81.
I'm sorry.
I'm not sorry. I'm just, where are we going from here now? I mean, people around the world just looking at us and just laughing their tails off.
Well, Alaska has a lot of open space.
Yeah,
and oceanfront property.
more by the day.
Well, I like the cold weather, but I don't like that kind of cold. But I'm just
amazed.
It won't
be cold for long.
Yeah. Right,
yeah, you're warming up.
You're right about that. Did we figure out if that's natural or man-made yet?
God is making them with a little help from America, and it's generous energy up north.
Generous greenhouse gas contributions.
Towards us there in Alaska, don't you know?
So everything else is God's will.
You haven't seen beautiful water till you've been to Alaska with all the rainbows floating on top of it. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
I tell you, you haven't been to Alaska until you've flown a plane into the Arctic tundra and chased down a wolf. They're good eating, too, by the way. And you stuff them with a breading, you know, a panko breading, and they're just
buffalo paws.
Just delicious.
You know what?
What was your observation?
Can you imagine if McCain and her, I mean, ran this country? I mean, what? Geez.
It would be just like Joe Sixpack.
It would be like it would be on Main Street.
That used to be an insult. I can't believe it.
Thanks for calling.
On Main
Call
Street,
back next week and we'll talk
on
about some
Main
issues.
Street's all right,
guys.
All right. Line one, you're on the air.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Nothing up my sleeve. Presto! Eat some squirrel meat. Stop picking on me.
All right. All right. Line three, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, this is Gary. How are y'all doing tonight?
Hey, what's going on, Gary?
Hi, Gary.
I just wanted to point out that it stuck with me all night long since the debate. I heard an O'Biden. She misquoted O'Biden.
Yeah, yeah. Did you hear the Bosniaks?
Yeah.
That was great. They love it.
That's one of those punk rock bands.
Right, the Raven Bosniaks. All you Bosniaks, give us a call.
I noted that I could hear Biden go a lot.
He learned that in anger management class.
Well, thanks, guys. I love listening to your show, and now I'm hooked.
So, all right. Good luck with that power. I hope you get some power by next week.
Thank you.
All right. Line five, you're on the air.
Mr. Smith, Winston Smith, called in earlier, and I wanted to say that it's been a long time since I've heard from him, and I'm very glad, and I've been looking forward to seeing him probably early this morning. I think what he was trying to allude to is that war is peace, ignorance is strength, and slavery is freedom. But most effective is imagine a boot smashing a human face forever.
Hey, are you by any chance going to be taking a rat cage over to Winston's, are you?
Boy, that was just whatever he said. Whew. I mean, just yeah. I felt the breeze over my head. Whew. I was.
That was an Orwellian reference. It's as is Winston Smith, by the way.
We have oil wells, all kinds of them in
but
Alaska.
You have George oil wells.
We have George oil wells. We have Tom oil wells. And well, it's, you know, you could say Alaska's Orwellian.
Orwellian.
Don't you know?
Yeah. Line 4, you're on
the
air.
You're such a maverick.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Sarah.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what they said, how old you are. But the other day when you was talking about Joe Biden, you said you were, remember his speeches from when you were in the second grade. And I was trying to think, how old were you in the second grade?
12.
She wasn't a day over 11, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought you might be like me because
I was sick a couple of years.
Oh, you were held back.
No child left behind. All right, line 6, you're on the air.
Hi, Ann. I had a question for Governor Palin. I was very shocked that Alaska has same-sex marriage.
And why haven't you done something about that?
You know, I
uh-oh.
I'm known as a maverick. Change. We need the Joe Sixpack sitting around on his kitchen table needs change.
Main Street.
On Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Needs change, don't you know? And I propose, we've got these beaver up in Alaska that are good eating. And I propose that we have a recipe swap, maybe, would be good. And, and we can get our aggression out, you know, with what's wrong with hockey. Well, there's nothing wrong with hockey.
See, is it true that they have same-sex marriage there because all you good Christians are afraid to pull everybody's pants down and see who's who?
I know who's who. I know everybody in Wasilla. I was the mayor there, and there's only 3,000 people. And I know just about everybody by name, and I know who's, you know,
you watch what
diddling.
Bathroom
I know who's diddling in the berries and who isn't.
Well, Governor,
so you can't tell me, young man.
When Gwen asked the question about,
I nailed that one.
If either candidate had changed,
you drilled it.
These two Yakimadoos, we're chirping at me like a couple of bald eagles over there, which, by the way, bald eagles, I don't know if you've ever had them in like a cold soup.
They fly fast. You got to lead
but
them like
you
10
can,
feet.
You can, you know, in like
drop
a,
bald
you know,
eagle
a chill. And that's, you know, a lot of times what flusters, it's those bald eagle feathers left in my throat. And you know, when I get flushed, sometimes.
Or in your hair.
Good eating.
The lady asked if you or Joe Biden had ever changed your mind about anything.
You know, Joe Biden is so boring. He's not as exciting as me. He just doesn't capture people's. He is boring.
He didn't wink a single time.
Don't you think he's boring? I really think he's boring.
All those speeches in the Senate.
He's just dull.
You've just been at this.
You've been listening to the Interside Radio program, which originates from KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, with yours truly, Scooter, Stacy Davis, Rick, and callers. See y'all next week.
As much as the bounty and freshness of summertime inspire me, this is my favorite time of year to eat. There's just something about that chill in the air that makes everything taste better. And of course, with fall comes some of the best produce of the year. It's sort of like a consolation prize for the end of the summer. One of my favorite and most versatile is all of the winter squash coming to market. The nice thing about squash is that no matter what type you buy, you can prepare them all in pretty much the same manner. Cut in half, scoop out the seeds, place on a baking sheet, face up or face down, it doesn't really matter,
and bake at 350 for 20 minutes to an hour until the squash is tender. From there, the options are nearly endless. Growing up, my mother would frequently serve baked butternut squash as a side dish, served with simple butter and brown sugar. Squash is good in soups, curries, ice cream, risotto. The options are endless, and I have a few recipes up my sleeve which I'll be sharing over the next few episodes. Squash is really good for you. For only 80 calories per cup, it contains loads of vitamin A, a good amount of vitamin C, fiber, and potassium, and it's also good on B vitamins, beta-carotene, as with most orange veggies, and omega-3 fatty acids. Winter squash are abundant at the farmers markets right now. A few of my favorites are carnival, sweet dumpling, acorn, and the venerable old butternut. My absolute favorite squash, though, hands down, is the kabocha, a Japanese variety which has a creamy and completely non-stringy texture with an edible rind. Be sure to choose squash which are completely unblemished. I don't mean they don't have discoloration, but the skin should be intact and taut, and as with most members of the squash family, it should feel heavy for its size. One of the best things about winter squash is its long availability, long after the frost comes, and its storage capacity. Certain hard-rind winter squash will last up to 6 months when kept in a cool place, such as a dry basement. This makes it perfect for anyone trying to eat locally long after the end of the growing season. From RestaurantWidow.com, I'm Lisa the Waitress, and you've been listening to In Season with Lisa on WCRS, LPFM 102.1 and 98.3, Columbus Community Radio.
Okay, coming to the end of this week's show. The Mike Cannon Show is produced for not-for-profit, community, and or micropower radio use worldwide. A reminder that coming up at the end of the month will be my yearly Halloween special I put on, a show dedicated to Halloween music, and in this year there'll also be a live spooky Halloween radio play. Got the run. Until next week, as always, I am forever yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
my skin comes into being. Sweat on my skin. Oh, this mess we're in.